Today our topic is lead in drinking water, in actually specifically Head Start centers today. And I came up with this topic from LinkedIn. Jim Rada, our guest on the line here, and I have been friends for quite a while, for years, decades probably, huh?
Decades, yes.
Yeah. We both started in junior high in public health. So. And,
as a child prodigy, yes.
He had posted an article of on LinkedIn that caught my attention about lead in a Head Start center that the I believe the county, Jefferson County, Colorado, in Golden is the grantee, but they have a key role in the governance and management of that organization there. And anyway, they had discovered lead in the Head Start Center, and it got me thinking about what the impact of that could be, and just that story of, oh my gosh, you know, of all those surprises that you can have in a Head Start Center. This one caught me by surprise, but it makes a lot of sense. I'll let Jim tell his story about his involvement in that issue and how he came to knowledge of it and what the response was and may still be occurring, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions. But first, I'll introduce Jim Rada. He's the Director of Environmental Health for Jefferson County Public Health in Golden, Colorado. And he's been in public health, environmental health, as I said, for many years, and is noted for his expertise in water and air quality, as well as other things. But he's also served in rural counties in Colorado, Summit and Garfield County, and been involved in oil and gas activity from a public health community aspect. It has been very interesting and just real knowledgeable on environmental health. And now you're especially an expert on lead in water. And I'll turn it over to you, Jim, and if there's anything else you want to add about yourself, or feel free to do that, but jump in and tell us your story.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. And it's good to be a part of this presentation today. I'm really happy to share the information, although this issue is still ongoing and there may be even some other kind of ancillary impacts on our public health programming here in Jefferson County. Let me start by just sharing what we experienced with the Head Start facility here in Arvada, Colorado. The Head Start facility in Arvada is an old school building, elementary school building that was purchased around 2011 by Jefferson County to house the Head Start program, which is a part or part of the Human Services Department in Jefferson County. The school itself was built in the mid-1950s, so it's quite an old building, probably 60 years old or so. It's in great condition. It's been well kept over the years, but it was built during a time when there weren't a lot of controls over the types of plumbing, and there weren't a lot of controls over what kind of construction and repairs and maintenance and things were done on buildings like that. So the county owns the facility. Head Start rents it from the county as the grantee, I guess you call it, Jeff. They pay the county to occupy the premises. And the building itself, I don't have a square footage figure, but it serves a population of somewhere around 320 children in the Head Start program, with about 65 or so staff members. So it's a very large facility. It does do multiple programs involving both children and adults. So there's a lot of people moving in and out of that building every day. So a lot of water being used in that facility also. Back in early March of 2016, the maintenance man for Head Start in this facility was informed that some of the faculty was experiencing weird tastes and colors and things in the drinking water. They were observing these things going on. And as a result, it got the attention of this maintenance man, who brought it to the attention of the administrators of the facility. And it took a couple of weeks to get process, you know, approval to sample the water. They figured it was an iron issue in the water supply, because it was mostly dealing with like red color in the water, particularly in lines that may have been stagnant for some time. But there was enough curiosity that the maintenance person wanted to do a further evaluation of the water to make sure he understood what was going on, so then they could look at what changes or improvements might be needed to the facility in order to get rid of those problems. Well, March 28th, he took samples, and kind of out of just a vigilance for, and I think perhaps somewhat in response to the issues that were going on in Flint, Michigan at the time, they ran a full heavy metal screen on this drinking water sample. And it was one sample that he took from a sink in a conference room that was used rather infrequently. So the water in that line serving that particular sink was typically in the line for maybe many hours, if not many days, before more water was used. And so he took an initial sample, didn't flush the line or anything, to my knowledge. And that was March 28th. April 13th, I received a call from Gail Perryman, who's the executive director for the Head Start facility here in Arvada. And as you can imagine, she was a little bit panicked, because the sample, she had received a phone call from the laboratory, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment Laboratory, saying that although the sample results had not been finished yet or processed yet, they should be looking at an alternative water supply because elevated lead in the water. And so Gail was quite panicked at that point and called, and I think she was referred to me by the human services director to find out what they needed to do, because this was an issue that she was not familiar with. And so we talked for a little while, and Gail, because it was a Wednesday, Gail decided, and it was right around noontime, she decided to go ahead and close the facility the rest of the day on Wednesday and all day on Thursday, and this particular facility does not operate on Friday or serve children on Friday. So they decided to close down basically for the remainder of the week so that we could immediately remove any exposure risk or hazard to the kids. Again, at that point, we didn't have any formal or final results on the sample, so we did a little scrambling to get the state to share those results with us, and ultimately we found that the lab result for lead came in to be about 0.18 milligrams per liter, and the standard or maximum contaminant level for lead in drinking water is 0.015, so we were a little over 10 times the allowable lead limit in the drinking water for that particular sample. So as I mentioned, this building was owned by the county, or is owned by the county, and it's the Head Start program is part of our Human Services Department. So within a number, probably within a couple of hours of Gail's initial call to me, the county had mobilized not only the administrator's office and the human service director's office, also our county facilities management director, our public information officer. We basically created an incident team to deal with or respond to the incident, and public health became a part of that, as well as some of our emergency preparedness folks. Although it wasn't a huge incident at this point, we needed to be coordinated in our response. So there was a meeting scheduled for 8 o'clock in the morning the very next day, on Thursday, the 14th. And at that point, we had not only all of the county departments that were involved or are involved with this particular type of incident, but we also had the city of Arvada water department involved and the city manager's office involved, because it was unknown at that point whether this was a city water issue or whether this was a facility water issue. So at that meeting, we began to work out a communications plan or strategy to make sure we were informing everybody that needed to be informed, that we were being very transparent with our communications. We also worked that morning to develop an additional sampling plan. So by 9 o'clock on the 14th, which was less than 24 hours later, we had removed the hazard, the children from the hazard, and the staff. We had also developed a communications and sampling plan, we worked with a local consulting group here that the county had under contract for these types of situations to the very next day, Friday, do a ramped up and much more extensive sampling of the school's water supply. That happened from, I think we started around 7:30 in the morning, taking stagnant water samples. We had left the water set all through Thursday and overnight on Thursday night. So we took the first round of samples, were stagnant samples from all of the drinking water fountains and other water inlets where children or adults or staff may have access drinking water. We also took samples from a few other taps in lesser used rooms. I think there was one teacher work room, that same conference room that was sampled originally, as well as in the boiler room, where just inside the building there was a tap that would help us understand if it was the service line coming into the building. Concurrently, the city took a number of samples alongside of ours, as well as samples from upstream and downstream in the main that served this building, so that we could, again, get a better understanding if water coming into the service line was contaminated or if it was somewhere between the city's main and the building or inside the building that was contributing to the lead content. So when we took those samples, that was Friday morning. We were fortunate enough to work with a private laboratory that could fast-track the samples for us, and they were able to have all of the samples. I think there was over 70 samples in total. Oh, I forgot to mention that after the stagnant sample, they flushed the building and, you know, ran the water 5 minutes or so from each one of those taps that were sampled, and then took a flowing water sample. That was done in order to see if there was a change in lead content between the stagnant and the flowing samples. So those were taken to the lab and analyzed, and we had the results on Monday morning, the following Monday morning. In the meantime, our emergency preparedness group was able to access a couple of large, I think they were 250 or 300 gallon sanitary totes for a supplemental water for the building. They were able to get those totes filled from a known lead-free source within the city. so that we were able to provide the facility with adequate supply of water to wash dishes, clean up classrooms, and those kinds of things. And the county also purchased a number of bottled water dispensing units for the classrooms, so that there was an adequate supply of bottled drinking water for the entire facility. So, again, we'd in a period of just a couple of days, were able to get the bottle or get the water issues under control, get some additional analysis done, make sure that we had all of the issues around water usage and safety addressed, and get that facility back open on Monday morning. And in the meantime, we were also able to communicate to the parents. Every one of the parents or families in that facility received a phone call on Wednesday night as well as Thursday night to inform them what was going on. Whether they got a direct call or answered the call or were left a message, every one of them was contacted. There was quite an effort on part of the Head Start staff to reach out to the parents. We also were able to send out a couple of press releases to the local media. Of course, you can imagine in light of what was going on in Flint, Michigan at the time, there was a huge concern that, you know, that there was some kind of cover-up or some sort of bigger issue involved here. And we were able to determine quickly that it was not the city's water supply that was contaminated, but the water in the building, or once it came from the main towards the building, was where the contamination source was. So let me stop at this point and ask if there's any questions.
For me.
Okay. So I mentioned that we got the water test results back on the 70 or so samples that were taken by our consulting group. And they also had, this is an interesting piece of property because in addition to the Head Start facility, there's a clinic in a modular building to serve underserved people on the backyard of this old facility. So we also had taken some samples there to make sure they were clear. Of the samples that came back, three of them were contaminated or had elevated levels of lead. And all three of them were in very infrequently used inlets or lines, water lines. None of the sinks or drinking fountains that provided drinking water to children or staff had elevated lead levels, which was really good news. So it appeared that, you know, those lines received enough flushing or what have you during the day that the water was not able to stagnate in those lines, or there wasn't accumulated lead in those lines. We started a deeper investigation, or the county started a deeper investigation at that point, and decided to locate the service line coming into the building. Nobody really knew where it was or what it was constructed of. They located the meter and they located where it came into the building, and so they kind of brought a locating service in and were able to locate the line. They did take a couple of samples from some above ground plumbing. In this case, the city's water provides water for the building's irrigation system also, so there were some above ground plumbing fixtures that they were able to take samples from, and those had also come back very high in lead. So that started to begin to give us a sense that it was something involving the service line. So they brought in some equipment and they potholed down to the drinking water service line. And the first hole they dug, they identified that the water line was apparently the original line, and it was made out of very deteriorated cast iron, which was probably part and parcel of the cause of the color and taste in the water. But they also noted that the joints of this water line were leaded. In fact, they had been welded together with some sort of a lead material. And so in identifying that problem, they felt that that was probably or likely the primary source of lead in the water. And they began to plan a project to replace that water line. And coincidentally, the city was also interested. Their water meter was in the sidewalk right next to the road in the front, so they had planned to move that meter anyway. So it was an opportunity for the county and the city to work together to move the meter and then ultimately replace the water line. And that happened, that project was completed on May 14th, and it was the water line was flushed and the samples were taken last week. New samples, a whole new round from the same inlets to the building and classrooms. And I haven't seen the results yet, but my suspicion is that we're going to see very low, if any, lead in those lines. So at this point, we're waiting on the results. We're hoping that it's clean. The county health department has a very vested interest in seeing that this water is clean also, because we are working toward building our own modular unit on the property to house our WIC clinic for that particular area. So the health department will be located on the property also, probably in another 3 or 4 months. So, anything I can answer questions, Jeff? Any questions?
What I was thinking about was, first I wanted to encourage folks to keep in mind their local health department. I think that's one of the key things. And I believe most of our states that are in Region 8 and North Dakota, of course, included in that, are served by a system of local health departments. So they should be readily accessible to each of you. So as we see in this situation, that was a real critical contact that was made there by the Head Start director, and one way or another, and ended up being a good partnership.
Mm-hmm.
You listed all those entities that were involved, the city, the facilities for the county. You mentioned the state health department as well, or the laboratories, and those are, you know, it's one-stop shopping convenience for early education, child care centers, and especially Head Start to tap into your local health department, because they work in a variety of situations on a regular basis with all of these entities. So they're already well connected, and it's kind of a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
In addressing an issue like this. So that was mainly what I wanted to plug. Coming from local health myself, I'm a big advocate for that.
Mm-hmm.
But any questions from you two or others that may have dialed in?
I guess this is Sarah. I don't have any questions. Just interesting to hear the situation that you went through, and just like Jeff said, you know, about our local connections too. I feel very blessed that I have a good working relationship with the state health department as well as our local county too, that I feel like they have been great to work with. So if this were to happen, it's nice to know we have them to help us.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, as far as lessons learned on this in general, for any person that works in or operates a Head Start center, to be proactive, This was triggered by weird taste in the water, which probably actually had nothing to do with the lead when it comes to the end of it, but
right.
It was discovered. What kind of things should you be looking for in terms of your facility as far as maybe age, or is there
mm-hmm.
a cutoff point, or how would somebody listening in on this know if it's something they should be thinking about?
Sure. Generally speaking, anything that's built before, or that was built before 1986, could potentially have some levels of lead in the plumbing. They stopped using lead piping and lead piping back in the, I believe, in the 60s or 70s. However, the lead solder rule for soldering pipe together did not go into effect until, I believe, 1986. And so it's interesting. I've had some subsequent conversations with our school district here in Jefferson County, and we're fortunate that we only have one school district in Jefferson County. But they, when they got wind of this situation, they began investigating their own facilities because they have over 150 school facilities in the county. And they discovered that they had done some lead testing in the past, and they had some schools built after 1986. I think between 1986 and 1990, they had four schools, and they discovered that some of those schools actually showed some elevated lead in the water, and they discovered as a result that some of the plumbers that had worked on those schools, although lead solder had been banned at that point, some of them were using up their inventories and wound up using it in some of these facilities. So they have decided to test all of their schools prior that were constructed prior to 1990. But there's a lot of facilities out there, as many of your folks probably know, that were built a long time ago. In Jefferson County, we also have we work with licensed child care facilities, and we have lots and lots of them in old churches and old commercial buildings and lots of other types of facilities that were likely built, you know, in the 50s and 60s. And so we're exploring what we need to do kind of in concert with the school district to see if, you know, we would follow the protocols and methodologies that they've established and kind of assess our inventory to see if and how many we might need to sample. Something I had left out of my original discussion was not only was I contacted, but we also internally to the health department discussed had lots of questions come up about health effects of lead and what should parents be doing, you know, and it gave us a real good opportunity to work on lead in general, lead issues in general, and really trying to inform parents of the necessity to check lead, check their children or have them tested for lead at an early age because of the potential health impacts. And then it gave us the opportunity to also talk to them about the many different sources of lead in the environment so that we could potentially get some more parents, whether through Head Start or just out in the community, aware of the need to have children, especially younger children, tested for lead, blood lead. There was, as you can imagine, there was a lot of concern amongst the parents at the Head Start facility that their children had been drinking this water for some time and, you know, should they be tested and who's going to pay for the tests and how many tests do they need? And so originally in our original powwow of leaders that were involved with this investigation, we wound up there was some question as to whether the health department could test all the kids in the facility. And we didn't feel that, ultimately, we didn't feel that that was appropriate, that we really needed to, because we felt that the exposure was rather limited in the risk assessment that we did, exposure was rather limited. So our message to parents was, if you are concerned, based on this information we're sharing, you should talk to your primary care provider to get tested for lead or get your children tested. It was really, we did a little bit of exploring or investigating what it would take, since our department does not have a lead blood lead testing service available, what it would take to mobilize such a service, and it was going to take some time and obviously some cost for us to do it if we had to, but we were prepared to, you know, at least stand up a clinic if need be. But it ultimately turned out that based on the results and the limited potential exposure, that we were able to really cast a message to the community and to the Head Start community there that we didn't feel that it was there was an extreme exposure taking place there. But if there was concern, parents should get their children tested. And if they didn't have a primary care physician or provider, that the health department would work very closely with those families to ensure that they had access to care, the care that they needed. So, you know, there was lots of questions from parents about, should I be concerned? And, you know, of course we said you should always be concerned about the health of your children and any potential exposures, but that's the opportunity to connect with your primary care provider. And then work through the risks in your child's environment and your family environment and decide whether it needs to happen or not. And then proceed if you can. So there was also lots of questions from us about, you know, things as simple as should we clean our toys in this water? Or should we wash our dishes in this water? And ultimately, it came down to the fact that this particular facility was equipped with a commercial kitchen, and we felt that the level of lead in the water represented very little risk in terms of potential exposure, especially if dishes were allowed to thoroughly air dry. If toys were allowed to thoroughly air dry before they were put back into use. So that was a very minor concern on our end, and I think we were able to allay the fears of staff and parents on that. We also had some questions. Obviously, there was, with 65 staff in the building, most of whom were women, there were a number of pregnant females on staff. And so there was concern because a lot of those folks do drink a lot of water, and the potential risks to their fetuses. And so we also referred them immediately to their physicians and suggested that they have their blood tested, just to make sure there wasn't a health risk.
Yeah, working with with children, you are really working at really a, relatively speaking to adults anyway, a higher risk group because they retain more lead than adults do. You know,
exactly.
I think I've seen about 60% of the lead that's ingested could be retained in the bones and teeth and that type of thing, whereas it's like 20% or 15 or 20% for adults. And so it's real important to be responsive in those situations. I had a question for Sarah and Misty. I know that one of why I love working with Head Start, and I've shared this a lot, and I'll be brief, but it's just the amount of public health that they do really opened my eyes, and I went, where have I been, I guess, all these years with respect to Head Start? But a lot of the things they're involved with, some health screening to some extent that I've been aware of in my brief and limited exposure to Head Start centers, but what do any of you have you done any blood lead screening with your population that you work with, or
Head Start? Early Head Start does require the children. That's part of their requirement to be in the program to get a lead screen done at. For our early Head Start students, 12 and 24 months of age. And then for our Head Start students, the 3 to 5 range, they want at least one screening done with follow-up if the lead levels were high.
Oh, okay. For each child?
Yep, each child that enters the program.
Okay, this is upon entrance. Okay.
You know, it's interesting that that was a question we had when we first got involved with this situation, and I don't know if it's an anomaly or if it's just something that happens in some Head Starts, but this one, there were a lot of children who were back or who were perhaps not current on their lead screenings, and so it was really difficult to know, you know, if we had a blood lead issue in the facility, because there were a lot of children who were behind on their screenings. Is that a common issue with Head Start?
Yes. It is hard to get the parents willing to do those tests. Sometimes our pediatricians aren't totally on board with that. So when we send them, then they say, well, I don't know why I need this screening. And the pediatrician says, I don't know why you need it either. But they do the paper screening tool, but that wouldn't tell us necessarily if they have been. Most parents just mark no to everything.
Yeah.
So it asks questions like, how old is your house or home? And
if you've been in a building that's old, you're exposed to any foreign-made objects, do your children play with foreign toys? It's just they get kind of confused with it. Well, I don't know where my toys are made or, you know.
Yeah.
The screening tool seems to be a little challenging for most people. I mean, it's really, it seems like it would be, more usable by someone who's really trained to use it. But that was a big issue for us because we, you know, there was a lot of questions around does my child have elevated blood lead? Well, the only way to know that is to get a test. And we have a number of folks in that facility, parents who move around a lot. And sometimes they move out of that Head Start to other facilities, or they move from one city to another, or, you know, and so it's hard to keep track of them sometimes.
We had that same problem with the oil boom here in North Dakota the last 5 years. We've had people move into the region and then move out. Most of them won't even establish that medical home or that dental home because they know they're going to be here for such a short time.
Right.
So our PRR numbers, our yearly numbers, reflect that, you know, we have so many kids that aren't getting those screenings and aren't making those contacts in our community.
Yeah, I bet that would be a similar dynamic in parts of Colorado, too, because we've had oil booms going on here, too, as well. Interesting. Jim, I have another, this is sort of tangential to the lead issue, but I was impressed with how you basically kind of activated part of your emergency preparedness system with your incident command kind of model, team that you established, and to kind of collaborate on, you know, dealing with this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had past discussions about, and there's a kind of a movement of what we with Head Start to take emergency preparedness planning to the next level. Are there any lessons per se for folks looking at developing emergency preparedness plans, or perhaps may have them in place, that this your experience here could inform?
Well, it's interesting. That's a good question, because when I got the initial call from Gail, I was I wasn't thinking about emergency preparedness or activating the incident command system, primarily because it wasn't my incident, or I didn't view it as our incident at the health department. You know, it was the county had already activated its own internal processes, and so the county administrator, the county human services director, PIOs from both agencies were already engaged with creating, you know, public information or gathering information. County facilities was already involved with the initiative. So public health, I viewed their request for us to be involved as a supporting agency, not as the incident commander or anything like that. Now, within a day or so of that call, we're fortunate here in Jefferson County to have a fantastic emergency preparedness and response group at the health department. They're really wired into all of that, and they're connected very closely with not only all of the other emergency preparedness groups in Jefferson County, but they're also connected with regionally. So there's all kinds of assets at their fingertips to if we had something bigger. But in this case, it was an opportunity for us to actually practice or train using our emergency operations plan. So one of the first calls that I made was to our emergency preparedness manager, Christine Billings, and she suggested to me, she came right into my office and said, we should activate our emergency operations plan and use this kind of as a training opportunity. And I said, well, that's a fantastic idea. Why don't you be in? And she explained exactly how it all should work, since I've not had the opportunity to practice this plan before. And so she went ahead and activated. She served as the operations chief for me, and that left me free to deal with all of the, you know, political and media and all that kind of stuff while she was really kind of getting our ducks in a row here at the health department. There was some challenges. I'll admit we had some challenges between our PIO. We have a very strong-willed PIO and the PIO for the county. And it took a little work, but we were finally able to get them to work together and understand that the county's PIO was the chief information officer, if you will, and that we were acting in support of them. So we were providing them with public health messages. We were, you know, updating them on the activities of the health department. We had a large role in this incident, but we, you know, left it in the hands of the county to really manage the incident. So. But we did activate our emergency operations plan. We stood up, you know, for periods, operating periods, and made sure we had our plans in place for those operational periods. We, like I said earlier, we were able to access some assets in terms of water tanks and water supply, supplemental water supply for the facility. That was all done through our emergency operations group. So that was, you know, it was a great exercise. It helped me to understand kind of some of the bureaucratic aspects, if you will, of the incident command system and making sure that the incident was thoroughly documented, at least from our department's perspective, so we knew exactly who we had working on what and how long they worked, and we were able to track all that information. And ultimately, at the end of that first week, we were able to demobilize our group and go back to business. So it was a good exercise, good lesson learned for us. It was very small scale, thankfully. It wasn't the whole city of Arvada, thankfully. That would have been a much bigger mess, I'm sure. But so that's kind of...
Even with a small, somewhat small response, and that even though you were in more of a supporting role into a larger system, you found it was still helpful to have your own kind of an incident command model set up to manage your piece of the action. Is that?
Well, it sure helped to delineate roles, you know, and make sure that we were operating appropriately in the roles that we had set up. And so, you know, like I said, it helped me to really focus on, you know, being part of the policy group, you know, or the, you know, maybe joint incident command kind of approach with the county administrator, you know, being that it was not only a county and children human services issue, but it was a public health issue. So the three directors were really able to work closely together, make sure we were mobilizing the right people for the right jobs, and then tracking everything and really getting well connected with the media so that this didn't become some kind of big media event. I did two TV interviews with some of the local television stations. It was interesting because it happened to be a weekend. I think we were expecting a snowstorm that weekend, and they covered it on Friday afternoon, and it was done. There was no more media coverage, I don't think, after Monday when we announced that the results had come back, and it looked like it was a very isolated situation. So we'll have the
good thing.
yeah, I was very grateful for that. And then there was a good article in the Denver Post. I did an interview with the Denver Post also, and we were able to get a lot more of the detail out. You know, obviously with television, you get a 30-second or 1-minute spot on the news program, and you get one statement to make your message hit home. And I think we did all right with that. But then one of the stations ran a kind of a other side of the story from a parent who thought we were hiding facts and things like Flint, Michigan. And so it was, you know, we didn't have to deal with that issue too long, but because we came right back with good information, we acted fast, we removed the children from the hazard, and that was really our message, was there's nobody at risk right now. If you have a concern about your child's health, talk to your doctor. Get your child tested. There's lots of different sources of lead in your environment. And, you know, it really takes an assessment to really understand whether your child has an issue, and if they do, where does that lead come from?
Great. Well, thank you, Jim. Any other questions regarding lead or preparedness even, I guess?
If anyone does come up with questions, Jeff, they can feel free to send me an email, and my email address is jrada, J-R-A-D-A, at Jeffco, J-E-F-F, as in Frank, C-O, .us.
Oh, okay, awesome. Well, thanks, Jim. And, well, if you can hang around, we'll wrap up here and see if there's any other discussion on other health and safety topics that are going on out there.
Sure.
Or if you need to get on to your work, you're welcome to just jump off at any time.
All right, thanks.
But thank you very much, and very interesting. And one of those kind of things that could have happened to anybody.
Absolutely. It's probably happening a lot more than we know.
Yeah, we probably don't want to know. Oh, we should know. But the conundrum. Well, are there, just to kind of go around or provide an opportunity in the call here, are there any miscellaneous kind of things going on in your centers, Sarah and Misty, that are in your travels or the affiliations that you wanted to bring up or toss around for input?
Nothing that I can think of right offhand.
Good.
I'd have to say the same. This is Sarah. We're just right now doing a big, one of our big initiatives that we're trying to work on is trying to see if we can get a grant for emergency preparedness, and just trying to get, which is, I guess, very relative to what we're talking about, and just makes me think of another aspect of being what we should be prepared for, you know, to have, you know, you think of maybe more commonly other things, but you don't always think about your water supply. And that would be something, too, that to just, you know, there's a lot of disasters that you don't always think about till they happen. So it's just more things to be prepared for.
And as your role as health and safety coordinator serving this population, they, you know, a lot of the systems are, there's systems in place just about everywhere, historically anyway, it seems, that have been tried and true to deal with tornadoes and floods and those type of disasters. But these kind of health-related things, outbreaks and that, maybe not quite as developed depending on your community, and if they are developed, maybe they aren't exercised or practiced enough to where you might feel comfortable knowing that you're prepared to, you've got a plan to kick in to address those kind of unique health type of things. And actually, they aren't that uncommon to occur in any community, especially when you look in terms of disease outbreaks and those kind of things, because it's out there. But so awesome. Who are you going through for your grant? Is that through the Office of Head Start or some other source?
Actually, it's the Child Care of America or Child Care Aware of America. So we have a national, I guess that's national organization, and then we break down into, like, we have the state, you know, so we're the Child Care Aware of North Dakota, but the national office has, they are selecting different Child Care Awares for, or have this grant opportunity. And our big thing, too, is just to try to get more people to think about child care. You know, so many, you know, the cities, and you have these emergency preparedness or disaster preparedness groups, but then they don't, and they think of schools, which is great, but then they don't always think about child care. And then, obviously, they're so vulnerable, our population, just because of, obviously, you know, trying to get infants out of an area or to, you know, but not even that, but just like we had talked about too, just the health, the vulnerability for them just because of their small bodies and their, you know, ways of, you know, just like you said for lead, you know, they're much more vulnerable if they were to have contact with lead than an adult would be. So then you look at that, not only are they dependent on this to help them get out of some place, they also are more vulnerable, obviously, if they are exposed to something. So, you know, and many times, too, obviously, you know, especially home child care, they're a provider by themselves. So they have one adult trying to get, you know, X amount of children out of a place or transport or, you know, there's just a lot of things. And just trying to get, I guess, like we had said, these bigger entities to try to just think about child care and know that we need to partner with them so that we can make sure that they are included as, like I said, to be recognized as a vulnerable population, just like nursing homes are, or those that are developmentally have some delays or disabilities that need some more assistance and children. So, yeah, it's just really, like I said, timely, and so this would be another place that we can, or another topic that we need to make sure that we include as well or to think about.
Definitely, yeah, the child care or early education, that really should be an emphasis or a section to any statewide emergency preparedness plan if you've got one in place. That makes me wonder. I think I'm going to do some probing to see what Colorado has in place. I think they have addressed some of that to some extent in my recollection, but so some of that information may be helpful to you if there is any, at least of what's handled here. Would your grant be for kind of a statewide scope in terms of preparedness or
yeah,
a different level?
Yeah. Yep, so definitely. So, yeah, I would appreciate any information that if you can find, Jeff, just because that will help, I mean, just to see what other states are doing and how they're, you know, trying to incorporate child care in their disaster preparedness, and that would be great because, yeah, we're just kind of starting to we've always done things on a very low scale, you know, trying to, like, I try to educate, obviously, providers or centers myself, like, what they can do for their own, you know, program. But as far as, you know, to try to do more, like I said, statewide, and to try to be on a bigger global, you know, approach to it, that's where we're really needing to make those connections, because I think, like I said, I don't think people really think about child care. It's not really on their radar to think about where all these children are, and then, like I said, how vulnerable they are, and they need more help and assistance to issues.
And whereas it, you may have those systems in place within your center on what to do, but if you're, I mean, in any emergency response, especially the more local it is, it's for a certain amount of time, assuming that you have an infrastructure above you to support you once it's engaged. So you're kind of buying time until, but if you, until the state, the county or state or feds, depending on the, you know, intensity of the response, can provide support. But if you don't have those connections made through a plan, especially at the state level, up front, then you're out there, you've got your, even if you have your own plan, you're out there hanging for a while till people figure it out, and then it could be too late.
Well, right, and then not only that, but, you know, we're almost like, you know, you think about all those first responders need child care, you know, so it's like, it's,
oh, exactly.
You know, so it's, if we want people to be able to go out and help people, we need people that can take care of their children in a safe place so that they're able to do so. You know, I mean, it's so interwoven that we need to, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done, but it's very important. So I'm hoping we get the grant. But even if we don't get the grant, we maybe wouldn't obviously be able to do all the things we would like to do, but yet we know that this is something we want to work on anyway, and we would do the best we can to at least try to make connections and do things that aren't so much obviously tied to money, but just to try to have those conversations and try to be more visible at tables of meeting, at meetings, and try to get more attention to child care.
When's your grant application due, or have you already submitted it?
I believe, I apologize, I don't know the exact date, but it's supposed to be in just the next week or two. I know that.
Okay.
So, yep, it's very much, yeah, because we just had a meeting on it yesterday with some more partners trying to get letters of support, and so, yeah, it's very, like I said, if there's any information you have, that would be great, just to see what we could, see what other states are doing.
Great. Yeah, I'll do that quickly here, because I've been collecting things as we've had discussions about emergency preparedness for Head Start programs for several months now. So I've been, it's kind of been, whenever I get a free moment, I kind of start, you know, Googling and digging around and talking to people. But I'll look back in my notes and see if there was some, something gave me that impression that there was some work that was some, done in, at some level in some places. But I'd have to go review that. But I'll, whatever I find, I'll shoot to you, or I'll let you know. Stop, I came up dry. So... Which would be all the more another point to make, that there's not a lot going on, if that's the case, and that you're doing something unique and important. But well, it's 10 o'clock, and I try to keep things within a time frame. If, does anybody have anything else? And,
no, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
thank you
all for dialing in, and we'll catch you next month.
Good talking to you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.